First of all, how many people know a lot about assertive community treatment? And how many people know a lot about fidelity? Okay, so I won't spend a lot of time on those things. I do want to, let's see, first of all, I say, okay, that I have no relationships to disclose, unfortunately. This is not a for-profit kind of situation. I want to acknowledge several colleagues. Maria Monroe DeVita and Lorna Mosier are colleagues in the fidelity measure I'm talking about, and Lorna and Tim and Jackie are colleagues in the Florida Project. And there have been lots of other folks who have been helpful in developing this fidelity measure. So, in case we get cut short for time, here's the talk in a few seconds. We're looking at a statewide program of community assertive community treatment teams in Florida. We're applying a new fidelity measure to those teams. The teams are learning to use the fidelity measure in a train the trainers model, and then using the measure as an objective guide to evaluate each other and develop a peer-based cross-training program and quality improvement process. We're going to integrate fidelity performance, or we are doing that, and consumer survey data, and we hope to have outcomes in terms of quality improvement as well as opportunity for research. Okay, that's the talk. Here's some details. First of all, some premises underlie the project we're talking about. First of all, knowledge evolves continuously. We know that pre-service training alone is insufficient. We need to have in-service training, and that professionals are working in varying degrees of isolation. Implementation needs to be an ongoing process. It's not just something you do at startup. Resources are scarce, of course. There are many reasons to do evidence-based practices. One is that it optimizes our outcomes relative to the resources that we put in. We want to do the best job we can given limited resources. But we need to monitor implementation and make sure we are doing things the way they're supposed to be, and indeed in order to evaluate whether we want to make changes or in what we're doing, as well as even in the practices we're applying. In our field, we don't put very much into R&D. This process is what we consider as R&D, which is a basic function in almost any industry. The final premise is that change in living systems comes from inside. If we look at the success of self-help processes, the whole ideology, if you will, underlying recovery, and the science behind complex adaptive systems. These are premises on which this project is built. I'll spend a few minutes on ACT and fidelity, less than I might have had to, and some critical factors that are involved in fidelity, and for this model in particular, describe very briefly the new fidelity measure, and then talk about the project in which we're using it. So here we go. We know about assertive community treatment. It's probably the longest standing evidence-based practice in terms of the quantity of evidence for people with serious mental illness. It's a team-based platform, and I say platform because it's really a context in which lots of treatments are provided, essentially intended to be everything that the consumers need in the community. Focus is on working collaboratively, on essentially achieving all of the outcomes that are, I think, now of a higher order than they used to be now that the model of recovery is being promulgated. The outcome research on ACT, however, is somewhat variable. There's some consistent outcomes, decreased in use of hospitalization, stable living in the community, people stay in treatment longer, and families and consumers are satisfied. But there are many outcomes in which the evidence is considerably more variable, and these are the areas that are of increasing importance as we establish recovery-oriented systems. There are potential sources of variability in this research. One is that these other areas may not have been targeted in the services that are provided. And more generally, we do not know about the fidelity of the implementation in a lot of the research that's been done. How accurately is the program really doing what it's expected to do to achieve those outcomes? Briefly, fidelity essentially does a program include what it's supposed to include and exclude things that are detrimental to the kinds of outcomes that are desired? There are purposes both in terms of quality improvement and in terms of knowledge development, i.e. research and practice. There is evidence that fidelity across a broad range of interventions is highly positively correlated with outcomes. You do what you're supposed to do, you get what you're supposed to expect for interventions that have a strong evidence base. It also serves, a fidelity measure can also serve as a reference point for anything you're going to do to change what you do. So since adaptation is part of what the general picture of evolving knowledge requires, you need to know what you're doing that's different from what you had previously been expected to do. If you don't have a good fidelity measure, there are problems for both practice and research. In the practice arena, and I can speak from lots of anecdotal evidence about an existing measure of fidelity to assertive community treatment in which I had a hand. Essentially, there were known gaps to that, but if practitioners use that as a guide to how to do the intervention and their incentives applied to using that as an index for what you're supposed to do, you may weaken the program because the things that were not included in the measure no longer correlate as well as they did in the initial use of the measure, for example, and the programs may be less effective as a result. There are consequences for research as well. If we're not measuring the things that are critical ingredients, we may not be able to differentiate better and worse programs as well as we should, and there's essentially weaker evidence for the intervention. So, what do we need to include in a fidelity measure for this program? An intuitive kind of mental factor analysis suggests that there are three broad areas. One is a recovery orientation, focusing on consumers' goals, developing a fully satisfying and independent life in the community, and in fact moving beyond the need for these kinds of services. The second is applying the necessary services with the relative intensity that are needed at the moment, but also thinking in terms of the long-term development, long-term process delivered where and when consumers are. And finally, to do that, we need a good team, and the team needs to have multiple disciplines, but it's not simply multidisciplinary, it's transdisciplinary in the sense that the work is done involves an integration of those multiple perspectives. So here's another measure that some of us have been working on for now 3 years. It's an expanded version. It uses something like the same structure as the DACTS, the older one. It's called the TMAC tool for measurement of assertive community treatment, but there are more items. There are 6 subscales involved. One looks at it's kind of the traditional operations and structure, things like the low ratio and the daily team meeting, how it's done, and relationships with other institutional providers. Two scales looking at the staff involved. And we look both at the kind of traditional core staff of team leaders, psychiatrists, nurses, but also specialists. And in looking at them, we look at whether they're there, the degree to which they're there, and their roles, getting at the whole teamwork issue, both roles in terms of treatment and also roles on the team with respect to other staff. 2 scales looking at practices, the traditional understood role of assertive and community-based care with varying intensity as needed, fully taking responsibility for the services needed and incorporating a range of evidence-based practices. And a final scale looking at the way planning is done, very much strengths-based, oriented to consumers' goals and leading toward as much self-determination as possible. There's a pretty detailed protocol involved in doing this well for reasons that will become apparent. Reviewers work in pairs, take a day and a half, look at a variety of data that you would expect a complex program like this to be able to provide. The use, the review process is very oriented to giving feedback for purposes of quality improvement, and recommendations are given at detailed levels as well as kind of broad themes. And so far we've seen that teams have really needed both of those. It's been applied in a variety of settings, typically with external reviewers, and in the project I'm going to talk about internal reviewers. If we put it up against some pilot data from Washington, we put the TMAC up against the DACTS, what we see is the reddish bars there are the DACTS at 4 points in time. Very little change as the programs improved. that is to say, as they were started up over a 18-month period. The TMACT scores go up progressively and were significantly different from the DACTs until the most recent evaluation. If we look at the subscales, that time dimension is incorporated within each subscale. So we're seeing these four bars representing 4 points in time. Three of the subscales are more traditional kinds of structural elements within the program. The evidence-based practices and the way of working with the consumer are the kind of newer items, and what we're seeing is it's harder to get those things established and to build them up as we go over time. If we weren't measuring these other phenomena, we would think the team was doing pretty well all along. So the inferences about this measure are that it does set a higher bar, it's more sensitive to change, that variations that we've seen are consistent with what we'd expect in terms of how hard it is to implement these practices. And if we look across states, I didn't show you the data, but the cross-state scores are consistent with the kinds of environments that we've had in multiple states in terms of policy and especially training and other resources. The whole scale and some key ones correlate significantly with a separate measure of recovery orientation, and it's been applied effectively. It takes a lot of effort to do it, although for a large program like ACT, it's a relatively small investment, but we are trying to make it more efficient as we go along. The Florida project. We've got 31 teams, been there for most of 10 years, the usual 100 consumers per team, the usual level of funding, although perhaps more modest than some states, a lot of Medicaid funding, some extra funds for housing and medication, training and consultation early on, and almost none since then. So we have a sort of captured point in time of 7 to 10 years ago. We have common outcome data that we can, mostly archival, that we can look at. The purpose of the project is to really establish a capacity to look at what they're doing and to track how they're doing, and to do that in the context of a peer group, meaning professional staff working with each other, but using this objective measure so that the collaboration process becomes a more acceptable one. And of course, link the data in order to do some not only evaluation of the program, but some basic research on what makes a difference within the program. The usual range of outcome data, archival data, but we also have consumer ratings through a web-based survey. And the usual kinds of questions we might want to ask about how the program is doing, as well as the kind of critical ingredients question. The train the trainers model is a kind of critical element of the project. We've got one person, a collaborator in developing this measure, who trained four different people, two pairs of people, not only to do the evaluation, the reviews, but also to train other people. So now we have 12 expert raters across the state, and they will all, each pair will evaluate five different, or are, they're doing this now, five different teams, so all 31 are taken care of. So how are we doing with this? What we're seeing is that the fidelity score profile is pretty much similar, is very similar to the Washington profile. So it's consistent with what we're expecting, except that it's at a lower level. It's almost a point lower in terms of those results. The teams are doing what they're expected to do, reducing hospitalizations and emergencies. We haven't gone far enough to be able to say the other outcomes that we're getting. What we're seeing, though, is essentially ACT teams that are within the range that we'd expect for teams that need to do some quality improvement. The process seems to be acceptable, and indeed the people who have been trained up have been very enthusiastic about having a tool that they can use to objectively evaluate what they're doing. Even though it has told them, whoops, they're not quite as special as they thought they were initially. It takes a while to learn to do this, so they're doing it at a slower rate, and I have less data to share with you as a consequence. One important learning, though, is that if we are to use this kind of model, We have to understand that the business of helping one another is a new set of skills that people have traditionally not learned. So we're going to have to help people learn that process. Implications for what we're about is that to have efficient, to make the feedback process go efficiently, we're going to have to work in terms of information modules. There are so many themes that are common across programs. You know, we need to be able to not custom write every report for each team, but rather use assembled information. It's a process that looks like we can use it with other evidence-based practices, although probably at a level that's less intensive than for assertive community treatment, which is a very resource-intensive program. And we really need to improve, and I think this is a very general inference here, we need to expand our use of information technology in training, in communicating between teams to develop that sense of peer. I mentioned that the teams that clinicians are often isolated, well, these teams are isolated, and yet they can learn so much from each other because they have different strengths. So to conclude, in order to implement evidence-based practices effectively, we need to continue to pay attention to fidelity. What are we supposed to do and how well are we doing it? In order to look at fidelity, we want to look as close to the critical processes as we can, not just these structural elements. The goal of getting to high-quality service, really using this as an example, presupposes the existence of well-informed communities of practice. People don't learn by themselves very well. They learn from each other a lot. In order to do that, we are suggesting that we need to make better use of self-help processes, and particularly in states like ours, which is extremely challenged for resources. There's never enough money there in particular, but I think in general. A fidelity tool that offers an objective guide to how you're supposed to do things can be very helpful in that context. So it's not a mutual admiration society where people don't have to be too defensive about it. We'd like to see improvements in the using information technology, both direct interpersonal communication as well as passing information about what to do in this process. There are a couple of references, their handouts have them. The submitted one has actually been accepted as of yesterday, so that will be the reference for that measure. And I don't know if we have time now for questions or if that will come later, but I'm at your service. Thank you.